When I was a kid, it was pretty easy to answer the question of what is God like? Because, you know, every kid knows that God's just this old dude who's sitting up there in heaven. He's got this really long beard, sitting on this nice golden throne, and he's a bit temperamental. You know, some days he's in a really good mood, other days he can be in a really bad mood, and there seems to be a whole bunch of things that can really tick him off. And it seems as a kid that I was doing most of them, or at least that's what my mother was telling me. How many of us kind of grew up with an image of God like that? You know, a God that was, yeah, not a very pleasant kind of character. And it's hopefully, you know, as we've grown older, our sense of God or our image of God has perhaps broadened a little. Perhaps there's been parts of that image that we're not quite as comfortable with anymore. Things that we're like, I think I don't really see it that way. You know, maybe even calling God him isn't the strongest thing that we come to. Because there are so many other images in the scriptures. And it's really good to actually look at the Bible and see, well, how does God actually describe himself? How does God actually present within the scriptures? And the primary place where God himself tells us what he's like is in our first reading tonight from Exodus 34. It's not the first time that someone has named God. That's back in the book of Genesis in chapter 16. And it's not actually a Jewish person that gets that privilege. It's a foreigner, an Egyptian slave woman called Hagar, who's the first person in the scriptures to name God. She's just become pregnant because Abraham and Sarah have given her to Abraham because Sarah can't conceive. And so Hagar conceives, and then Sarah is now feeling put out because she's not able to conceive, and the slave woman is able to conceive, and so Sarah begins to treat poor Hagar really badly, and Hagar runs off into the wilderness. And while they're there in the desert, the Lord comes to her, and he sees her. He sees her need. He sees all of the things that she's going through. And so Hagar says, "You are Elroy. You are the God who sees." And it's a beautiful name for God, a beautiful way of realizing the way that God wants to be present to us. But in Exodus 34, the people have just recommitted themselves to the covenant. Moses has been up there on the mountain, receiving all of the instruction, giving all of the guidance about how to build the sanctuary, how to worship the Lord. And the first thing that the people assembled down on the plain below the mountain do is they break the first two commandments. They make an idol. They form this image of the bull in order to worship that. And so it seems the God is a little bit annoyed at this. You know, the God seems to be a little bit on the angry side, because it does take a bit to stir God up. And there's a whole series of interactions, and Moses intercedes on behalf of the people. And then we get the story that we hear. The Lord descends in a cloud, and from the voice of the cloud, from this, Moses hears the Lord himself address Moses. And he says his name, Yahweh, Yahweh, the Lord, the Lord. And what does he say of himself? A God who's compassionate and gracious, slow to anger. A God who is full of loyal love and faithfulness. These five attributes then get repeated again and again and again across the scriptures as people ponder upon this scene. They ponder the way that God reveals himself to Moses and then to us. You know, what is the nature? And I haven't got time to do justice to these five beautiful attributes about God. But I do want to spend a little bit of time on the first one, the idea of a God who is compassionate. And the Hebrew word there is rahum. And it's the root word of Rahum is Rahem, which is the Hebrew word for womb. And just as a mother tenderly carries a child within her womb, so it becomes this first image, and it's the first way that God describes himself, you know, of a woman's compassion for her child. So God has this same tenderness, this same desire, this same stirring deep within him to look after us, to make sure that we experience the very best of all that God is. You know, the God who's compassionate and gracious. And I've got to mention that the Hebrew there for slow to anger actually says that God has a big nose. And you're like, what? How on earth does that make any sense? You know, when you get really angry and you kind of feel yourself burning with anger, we sometimes say, and you know, your face sometimes, you know, goes a bit red and a bit flushed as you get this righteous sense of how dare that person cut me off in traffic or whatever the terrible offense that the other person has just done. And you feel this heat kind of ascending upon you. Well, the Hebrew says that, well, God has a long nose or a long, there's a sense that it takes a while for the heat to get to the end of his nose. You know, those images that you have in the cartoons of the character who's really full of anger and the steam starts coming out of their nostrils as they're about to unleash their fury. Well, God has a long nose. He has he's slow to anger. And we see that so often, that he is provoked at times, but it takes an awful lot of stupidity and frustration and rebellion on the part of the people. So God, the Lord who is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, full to overflowing with this loyal love and with this faithfulness. A beautiful way of understanding God. And Jesus seems to be echoing it himself tonight in the gospel when he tells Nicodemus that for God so loved the world. Didn't want to condemn the world. He didn't want to be angry. He didn't want to smite it. He didn't want to cause his wrath to fall upon the world. No, the first impulse of God towards us is to be in love, to call us more deeply into this life of love. The God who sees us is the God who's wanting us to experience that fullness of love in him. And that's the way that we're meant to celebrate and understand the Trinity. A God who is inviting us more deeply, simply into relationship with him. A God who is wanting us to experience the fullness of life with God. And so to have that image is slowly changed and transformed. You know, those static images that we often have about God, you know, kind of being absent or distant, and we have to do a whole lot of crying out in order to awaken him, in order to stir him up. Well, again, we get the image of a God like that in the scriptures, but that's the worship of Baal. It's not the worship of the God of Israel. The God of Israel is the God who's longing for us to experience the intimacy of life and love. How different would our lives be when we experience that intimacy, when we know that God's first desire, his first impulse is to love us. His first desire is for us to be in a deeper friendship with God, to be caught up in that wonder of the dance that is already there between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. This invitation to us is to a deeper friendship and a deeper communion with the Lord. So let's indeed give thanks that our God is available to us, that our God is longing to get to know us better, that our God is available to stir within us this desire to respond in love to the love that he already pours out so generously upon us. Let's continue to open ourselves to the God of grace who continues to make himself available to us today.